I so much appreciate the opportunity to finally get to be here with you. We've been planning this trip, I guess, since November of this year. And talking back and forth, and with the weather that you've been having and the weather that we've been having, which is nothing like yours. We've had a lot of ice, but not a lot of snow, and you've had a lot of snow. And so every time that we have set a date or a time, well, either you got weather or we got weather, and we kind of had to postpone it. And this character here has been emailing pictures of my granddaughter that was supposed to come with us, and she's in Florida this week or this weekend, and so is my grandson that was coming. And he's been telling his grandsons now that my granddaughter is coming. So first thing that happens to me, whatever, I walk in here, one of his grandsons comes up and said, "Where's your daughter at?" I said, "I'm sorry, you know, they just weren't here at this time." So we've been trying to get here for a good while, and I do appreciate the opportunity. We thank the world of JR and Sue. They have came to Suffolk Ridge, and he's held, I think, about 5 meetings there. And we have every intention of having him back again later on. And like I said, I have tried my best, my wife and I, Brandon, to get down here. I'll tell you a little story about a state trooper one time came to Glasgow, and he gave a talk where we were at there. And he said, most people don't know it, but he said, if you give the best excuse we've heard on a Friday afternoon, he said, we'll just give you a warning. We won't give you a ticket, just give you a warning. And he said, this day I had went out, and he said, I got it at the bottom of this hill. And he said, it's always good for 10 or 12 speeding tickets. That day, he said, I hadn't written a ticket one. And he said, he's getting close to the end of the shift. And he said, I thought, I'm not going to write a ticket. This never happened before, you know. And he said, I looked, here come this Corvette. And he said, he'd come on completely off the ground on that. And he said, he'd come down there 80, 90 mile an hour. He said, I turned the lights on, I run him down. He said, fella, he said, I've been waiting for you all day. The guy said, here. He said, I got here as quick as I could. And so that is the situation with me. I got here as quick as I could. 1 Kings 8 and verse 22 and 23 that was read a moment ago. Solomon tries to describe for us the kind of God that we serve. And he describes this God in great contrast to the gods that were in his region at that time, whether it be Ra from Egypt, or whether it be across the world to the Mayan community, to the sacrificial gods there. When he looks at Jehovah God, whenever he looks at the creator of all of the world, he sees a personal God. He sees a God that is not domineering like Ra, that is not seeking to end your life like the Mayan God would be. He sees a loving God. He sees a God that is portrayed in Scripture more often than not in two models, and that is as a father and as a husband. And that's the way I want us to look at God this morning. I want us to turn, first of all, to the book of Hosea. The minor prophet Hosea, as he tries to describe God, as God is trying to work through him and describe himself to his people, does so in a couple of different ways. And he does so, first of all, as a husband. Now, I don't know exactly how everything developed in the book of Hosea between Hosea and his wife Gomer. I do know this, that their marriage did not work out well. I know that Gomer gave birth to 3 children, none of which were Hosea's. Now, I don't think that God made that happen, but I think that he allowed that situation, that decision that had been made by Hosea's wife, I think he took this heartbroken prophet, and I think he said, in the situation that you are in now, that you have to come home and you have to look at 3 little children there that you know are not yours. And yet you have loved them, you have cared for them. And we know that because of the names of these children. In fact, if you will look at them, God has himself instructed that these children be named these things. Jezreel, God will scatter, is the first. And then if you look at verse 6 of chapter 1, Loruhamah, no more mercy. And then if you look at the third child in verse 9, Loami, not my people, seems to insinuate the story that I have told, that Hosea is married to an unfaithful woman who has born three children that are not his. And so Hosea has enough of it, and he gets rid of his wife. Now, God comes to Hosea, and he says, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go back and get that woman, and I want you to buy her and bring her and those children back home. In effect, Hosea says, I can't do that. I don't love her anymore because of what she has done. And so then God tells Hosea, you go tell my people that that is exactly the way I feel. You go tell my people that you have committed adultery against me. You have gone astray from me, and yet you expect me to love you. But not only that, if you turn over to chapter 11, I see another part of God. Not only is he a heartbroken husband whenever we are unfaithful to him, he's a father. In chapter 11, he tries to make us understand how much he cares for us through the model of a father. He said in verse 1, when Israel was a child, then I loved him. He's looking back at the time of Moses and the Exodus. When Israel was a child, I loved him. And I called my son out of Egypt. And it was I that taught Israel how to walk. My wife and I have three daughters. And we have nine grandchildren. And we have been actively engaged in sitting down and showing every one of those children how to walk. She'd get over here, I'd get here, and we'd take one of those children, and we'd let them go, and they'd take a step or two. And so excited, weren't we, whenever they learned to walk. And to talk, for that matter. You know, we spent the first year of our life teaching them to talk and walk. Now we tell them to sit down and shut up. But that's the way that God is. He said, I taught him how to walk. I taught Israel how to walk. There is a connection, people, between you and our God. A connection like a husband, a connection like a father that we cannot dismiss, that we cannot forget. We're not talking about a God like Ra that is far off. We're not talking about a God like the Mayans that would destroy our lives. We're talking about someone who loves us, who needs us, who wants us, who has done everything that they can for us. When I was a young boy, I was born and raised in Lubbock, Texas. My dad was from Monroe County, Kentucky, but during World War II, moved out to West Texas and never moved back. But anyway, whenever I was out there, there was an old man by the name of Mr. Yates. I was good friends with one of his boys. And Mr. Yates was the community father for everybody. When your bicycle was broke, Mr. Yates would fix it. Anything that you needed, Mr. Yates was always there. That's the way a dad does. That's the way a dad treats children. And everybody felt like that this was their father. Well, one day we asked him, said, take us on a fishing trip, Mr. Yates. He said, I will. I take you to Buffalo Lake. It's about 60, 70 miles from where we were at. Well, we all loaded up in the old pickup that he had. And he had built a shell on the back of this thing out of plywood and built a little rack and slid a mattress in there and had a little house door on the back end that was cut off and had a little house on the back of the truck. Now, later, you know, they made campers and things. Well, this was back in the late 50s and early 60s, no such thing. He had the first camper that I'd ever seen. Well, he loaded us all up, took us to Buffalo Lake. And there we are. We're on the bank fishing and everything. And everybody's fishing. And somebody looks up in a tree and says, "What is that?" And they say, "That's some kind of animal that's up there." And they said, that's a mama raccoon with a whole bunch of little babies. Well, we got to watching them. We went to the truck and got some cookies and everything. We started laying those cookies in the fork of that tree. And old mama never come down. But in a minute, one of the babies come down and grabbed a cookie and went back up. We said, it gonna work. So we got another little piece of cookie and we put in the tree. And they started coming down. And in a minute, I mean, they'd be right there. They'd almost eat out of your hand. Well, in a minute, mama come down. Somebody said, "We're going to catch her. We're going to catch her. We got a rope over here, and we're going to make us a noose. And red wine, David, red wine, you're going to hold the noose like this." In the tree, the fork of the tree was right. "You're going to hold the noose. Milam, you're going to feed him. And I'm going to holler, 'When do you pull the noose?'" David Yates said. Of course, it's his daddy and his truck and his cookies. So in a minute, there we are. Old Mama Coon comes down. David Yates says, "Now." And Red Wine pulls on it. And the coon is just doing crazy. And so we had never thought about what we was going to do had we did catch her. And so somebody said, "What are we going to do?" I said, "Over here." And I opened up the door and we throw them in. I swear to God, JR, I swear to my Father in heaven, I thought Mr. Yates was fishing. The poor man was laying up there asleep on the mattress. And the whole camper set into doing like this right here. And the door opened, and here come Mr. Yates with his eyes like this, and here come Mr. Coon with her eyes like this. And he said, "Boys, what did I ever do to y'all to deserve this?" He said, "Get your stuff. I'm taking you home. I'd be safer in front of a firing squad than I am." My point is this. Put yourself in God's position. Some of the things that we do, some of the attitudes that we develop, some of the things that we say. What did God do to deserve for us to treat Him any such way? As a husband or as a father? And while you think about that for just a minute, I want you to understand that whenever we look at the word father in the Bible, we're looking at a word that is used that says Abba. Now, there are three times in the New Testament that this word is used. It's used in Mark chapter 14 in verse 36 when Christ appeals to the Father in the garden whenever he says, "Abba, Father." It's used again in Romans chapter 8 in verse 14 through 16, which speaks of us in a place of protection, to where we're talking to God as Abba, Father. And once again, in Galatians chapter 4, in the first 7 verses, where Paul says that's an honor bestowed upon Christians, that this is Abba, God, your Father. You know something interesting about this word, Abba, Father? It is A-B-B-A. A-B-B-A. Write it down on something. And then flip it over. And it's the same. A-B-B-A. Now flip it. It's the same. A-B-B-A. What does it mean? It is a word that means this. That God is with us in good times. God is with us in hard times. God is with us when everything is going well. God is with us when nothing is going right. He is our Abba, Father. And yet we look and we treat Him in such disrespectful ways so many times. And like Mr. Yates, God must be saying sometimes, "What did I do to you to make you treat me any such way?" With the kind of attitude that you have about my service, With the lack of study that you have, with the lack of dedication, what did I do? What did I do to you that would make you be that way? Look at Malachi, the very last book of the Old Testament. You know, there's a question asked here in Malachi that says this, beginning at verse 6. He said, you know, a son honors his father, and a servant his master. If then I am a father, where is my honor? And if I'm a master, where is my fear? My father passed away when I was 18 years old. Not quite 18 years old. We were the very best of friends. I have no lie to tell. We had our ups and downs, there's no doubt about that, but we were the best of friends. He always was looking out for me. I remember one time we had a little plot of land, and we'd got a bunch of bottle calves, feeding them bottle calves, raising them up. So he said, I tell you what let's do. Let's fence off an acre, and we'll put four or five of these bottle calves in each of those lots. Now he went and got some big old railroad ties somewhere, where they was putting in a new railroad. And these things are just massive, and we worked a month putting three of those in a corner and then two braces. Well, you couldn't have pulled the things up with a bulldozer. And then we got this big old Texas barbed wire, and we tied to that and stretched the thing for a full acre. Now, it wasn't high tensile wire. And if it stayed there for any length of time, it would sag. And he said, I don't want that. I want to come back and have to do this again. So he took his 49 Plymouth and pulled it to the end and tied the wire on one end and tied it to the bumper on this end. Pulled the coil wire off so it wouldn't start. Put me in the car and he said, now just jig the starter just a little bit. Well, I would. And the car would move up. He hit the bob wire. And it'd go bing, you know, it's getting tight. He said, jig her one more time. I'd hit the key and being a standard shift, it'd move up. Woo, 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 woo. You know, we're getting high tuned here now. Hey, jigger one more time. They called me Jimmy. Jigger one more time, Jimmy. And I jigged it one more time. He said, we're right there. We're right there. He said, let's try it one more time. And I went, pow. I heard it from the other end. I heard it coming. It broke from that fence post right there. And my daddy heard it. And he looked at me, and his eyes was this big. And he said, run. And I was in the car, I didn't need to run. He always cared about me. Always cared about me. Now I want to take you to a passage in Luke, the 15th chapter. You know, when I was a young man, and you know what? I got a guy at home that sits right here, and I know when to quit when he bends over and goes rubbing his feet on the ground. So I don't know when to quit. I'm going to run probably 7, 8, 10 more minutes. That'd be all right. If it ain't, y'all just rub me off. Luke 15 is my favorite chapter of all. When I first started preaching, I started preaching out of this chapter, and I don't think I did it justice. I looked at these four cases here in Luke 15, and stop and look at them for just a minute. In verse 3 through 7, we've got a sheep that's lost. And I used to say, you know, there are four ways that people can be lost. Now, that's just careless, to let your sheep get away from you. And so I think people are lost by carelessness. I used to preach that. In verses 8 through 10, there is a Cohen that is lost. And that's just uselessness, because when you've got a Cohen, no matter what the value, it's not worth anything as long as it's lost. You have to find it. So people can be lost because of uselessness. And then from 11 through 24, we have a son here who willfully turns his back on his father. And I think most of us are lost because of willfulness. And then we have an elder brother in verses 25 through 32. And what we have there is we are lost a lot of times because of bitterness. But I want to bring everything together that we've talked about this morning about God as our Father. And I want us to look and primarily concentrate on the third of those. And that is found in verse 11. A certain man had two sons, And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of thy substance that falls to me. And he divided unto them his living. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, and he took his journey into a far country, where he wasted his substance with riotous living. And when he had spent all, there arose a famine in that country, and he began to be in want. And he went and he joined himself to one of the citizens of that country. And he sent him into the fields to feed swine. And he would fain have filled his belly with the husk that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. But when he came to himself, he said, How many hired servants of my father have bread enough to eat and to spare? And I perish here with hunger. I will arise and go to my father. And I'll say unto him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and in thy sight. I'm no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me one of thy hired servants. And he arose and he came to his father. But while he was yet afar off, his father saw him. And he was moved with compassion. He ran and he fell on his neck and he kissed him. And when his son said unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and I am no worthy to be called thy son. But the father said to his servants, Bring forth quickly the best robe and put it on him, and a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. And bring the fatted calf and kill it. And let us eat and make merry. For this thy son was dead and is alive. And he's was lost and he is found. And we began to make merry. It's late 1964. I was a little bit over 14 years old. I remember one night my dad came in. And I had failed to do a chore that day. I had a car. And he told me, he said, I want that car left where it's at right there. And I said, but that's my car. I bought that car. He said, I know, but I want it left right there. And tomorrow you can do what I told you to do today. And then tomorrow, I don't care, you can drive. We lived out in the country. It wasn't hazardous for a 14-year-old to drive out there. I didn't get on the highway much, just drove around out there. You leave that car here. Now, me and your mother and little brother, he was 9 years old, or he was 7 years old at the time, we're going to go to town. You leave that car here and don't you come. Now, I don't want to hear of you in this car. Well, they left, and I thought, that old man is not going to tell me what to do. I worked, I bought my car, I paid for my, and that man is not going to tell me what to do. He's not going to do it. And so, a fellow was wanting to buy my car, and a good friend of mine, I called him. I said, you know what, I'm ready to leave this country. I'm going to sell my car, and if you go with me, we're leaving here. We go to Amarillo, it's 110 miles away, and that's what we did. We didn't tell anybody. We left. And we found ourselves in the middle of Amarillo, and we rented a little hotel place there, and we both got jobs washing dishes, and there wasn't anything there but druggies and drunks and prostitutes and two hard-headed little boys. And I knew pretty quick I'd messed up. But I didn't know what to do. And I lived with that for a week. Sat there for a week, waiting. What am I going to do? What can we do? Look at the mess that we've made. And one day I seen a car pull up and heard a door slam. And I looked out and it was Daddy and Mama. Mama said, stay down there. He told her, he said, you stay here. I'll go up. You stay here. And I thought, oh, he's going to whoop me, but he's going to take me home. And he came in. I had never seen my daddy cry. Never. Never, ever. He sat on that bed and he said, I don't know what I've done to deserve this. But I'm sorry. And I can't make you go home. Because this is your choice. I just want you to know I love you. And he walked off. He got in the car and they drove off. Later that night, I stuck my thumb to the air from Amarillo to Lubbock, Texas, 110 miles. I got into Lubbock about 3 o'clock in the morning. And I snuck in through the garage door, made me a pallet in the garage. Wasn't but just a minute. He opened the door, came out the garage, and he said, "Got a room in there. I didn't rent it out." He said, "I've been waiting on you. You see, I can't make you come back, but I love you. I love everything about you. Even when you go against me, I love you. And I've been laying in that bed every night, son, waiting for you to just come through the door. Just knock on the door." I told him, I said, "I don't deserve to be here." He said, "Yeah, you do, because I love you." Now, here's the deal, folks. It's just as simple as this. We got a God in heaven. He's sitting at the window of heaven, and he's looking out. I don't care where you've been. I don't care what you've done. I don't care. He wants you to come home because he loves you. My wife's daddy prided himself on having a team of mules that could pull any log out of the woods of Monroe County. If you understood the heart of your God today, and if you're not a Christian or you've strayed away, and there's something that is a sin that is standing between you and your God, and if you understood that you're breaking the heart of your Father in heaven, his mules couldn't hold you from literally breaking loose and running down this aisle and saying, "Father, I have sinned." But you know what? The dad never let the boy explain. He said, "Shh. I deal with this. That's what I do. I'm a father." He turned to the servants and he said, "Let's have a party. Because my son was dead and he's alive. Let the angels rejoice today. Because when we sang this song, you had the courage to step out into that aisle and come back to your Father. He can't come get you. You've got to come to him, and you can do it now while we stand and while we sing."